way up north. And it's snowing up there. And it's muddy. And most of the houses in the north, at least where they were where I grew up, we had a mudroom. And it was usually a side door or back door, because you didn't want to drag all that mud in the front door because Mom would get you. So there was a little room set aside called the mudroom, or place that you come to put your boots or something like that. And even in North Florida, and well, most everywhere, in rural areas where there was farmers back in the 20th century, we're in the 21st century, so I'm talking about from the early 1900s to the year 2000, most every house had a special room, and it was called a mudroom for the most part. A mudroom had pretty much only one purpose. It was a place for messiness. If you ask Judy, she'll tell you that I am the messiest person in the whole wide, wide world in the bathroom. In fact, my daughter nicknamed me the bear. So when I go to visit, because she's a neat man, so you have to be careful. So I learned now to clean up. But she said, "You're the messiest person I've ever seen in my life." So after I retired and we're no longer living in parsonages, Judy said, "Whenever we get our own place, you're going to have your own bathroom." Okay. I like that. I really do. Because I can be messy, and I admit to it. But in those days, farmers coming out of the field, or work folks for the most part, didn't have to necessarily be farmers. It could have been people that worked in the mines, or farms, or creeks, who shed their muddy boots and overalls and coats and other equipment. And up in the mudroom. Even in the old schoolhouses, you know, you used to have a cloakroom. You know, you put all your messy stuff there before you enter in. Most of the time, like I say, they didn't want you walking through the living part of the house with dirty shoes. Mom especially said that's clean territory. The mudroom served as an intermediate space from the outdoors into the house, and it was kind of a space where mud and messiness were allowed and expected. Now, the reason I put on the website that my Sunday message and the online messages are similar but different is because my ad libs usually are different. That's why. Because I get myself thinking, and as I'm sharing something, something will pop up. But look at the person's mudroom in their house, and you'll see signs that most likely they have a relationship with the land or the area that we live in, or their industry or their vocation. Because we, a people of the earth, are born of Adam, Adama in the Hebrew, which simply means earth or dirt. We've come into this world from the original sin of Adam, because we've come in messy, we come in already messed up when we come into the world because of the sin that entered in. But we learn something about experiences in the world. We experience and we trust in the providence of God to get us through hard times. How many of us have been through hard times? And you look back and say, wow. Because of the providence of God, I was able to get through all that. We know much of our success lay outside of our control. Whether it's the weather, elements, seasons, seeds. Seeds, especially right now, is really challenging. As I got a grandson, decided to do a garden this year, and he wanted to do his garden from seeds. So he planted seeds, and he watches these little plants come up, and they get healthy, and then he plants them. He had a lot of them that didn't make it. So we move in a rhythm, unified with our own environment, and we hold ourselves as an independent relationship with our natural world. Our lives were messier, but our hearts were surely sure. So today, we as a society and people of God are preoccupied with cleanliness. We're preoccupied with speed and success and order. Everything's got to be in order. We're also a society suffering from more anxiety and stress than any other generation before us. We set higher and higher bars and goals and We put our faith in efficiency and control, and we demand that we're going to steer our own ship. While an overwhelming percent of men and women who worked on farms in the early parts of the 20th century, but today most people either work in a very immaculate order, technologically savvy office, or from their well-wired homes. It's amazing that we can now work from home because of the internet. So as a result, we lost touch with the land that feeds us and nourishes us, with our own original story of roots. Did you ever remember that program way back when, Roots? I always found that fascinating, whole story about a group of people where they came from and celebrated their roots. We all have roots. But during that, we lost the acceptance of mud and mess. As a vital part expected in our lives, we devalue messiness. In fact, we disdain messiness. We no longer create a space and a place to be messy. We do that with children growing up. We put aside a playroom or something like that for kids to go and just be messy. There's a gentleman by the name of Tim Hofford that wrote a book, simply entitled the book Messy, The Power of Disorder to Transform Our Lives. You have to think about that. He notes that the need for order and control permeates our culture today. In our plans, as he called them, instead of us, we need to embrace messiness. He tells stories of inspiring people doing extraordinary things, and he notes that our most impressive human qualities, such as creativity and resilience, are produced by disorder and disarray in our lives, not by order and control. Same thing happened if you think about Edison when he finally figured out, with the help of some of his associates, the light bulb. That came out of a need for creativity and resilience because, you know, any time that we have anything in our modern time, people invented it. It's become just normal. Can't think of it. Knowledge. Knowledge is increasing so fast that it used to be like, well, think about it. 100-some years ago, the Wright brothers with the first functional airplane. And now we go to the moon. We go into the outer places of space. Knowledge has increased. Computers, back in the early 40s when computers first came in, a room this big had the computing power of our cell phones today. It's amazing. Anyhow, think about it. The stuff we're experiencing. Unexpected changes of plans. Judy always tells me, you want to make God laugh? Tell him your plans. Unfamiliar people, unseen events. These generate new ideas and, more importantly, relationships. Disorder is integral to our spiritual and our emotional health. In opposition to that, our inclination for tidiness in our lives can mask a deep and debilitating fragility that keeps us from innovating and growing. Mudness, if that's a word, and messiness, they birth new things. They grow ideas, they generate thought, and create new beginnings. And everything renewed or created, whether it's a brainstorming idea, molding a piece of pottery. How many of you do that ceramic thing with pottery? Well, forging a new relationship begins with an ambiguous mess, a big clump of clay, or better put, mud and water. Messy entrances give way to new interesting beginnings. Messy re-entrance gives way to renewed and revitalized beginning. In our scripture today, Jesus offers us a vital lesson about mud and about how we truly see, how we perceive ourselves, how we perceive our world, and how we expect and just plain accept messiness and muddiness. truths that lie beyond our limited realm of intellectual and the five senses of understanding. But if you listen closely, if you read all of chapter 9, you would have noticed that everything Jesus said seems to be upside down and inside out. What we imagine to be true and clear, obvious, deceives us. What seems to be muddy is hard to understand. Miraculous that we need to suspend our system of knowledge in order to embrace faith and belief. Represents cleanliness and purity. For Jesus, it's as clear as mud. What makes a lot of sense. In order to see and to know Jesus, we need to make things muddy. I always like that one song that says, I can see clearly now. Or the one we sang last week about turn your eyes upon Jesus and the things of this world will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. We need to muddy our circumstances and our certainty, muddy our expectations, muddy what we believe to be true, muddy our need for boundaries and divisions and judgments, and muddy need to control what we demand to be truth. We need to blur the boundaries that divide us from our perceptions and ourselves, Jesus and others around us. Our sense of disorder, divisions, judgments, impositions of boundaries and rule is literally keeping us entrapped in sin, preventing us from seeing the truth of who Jesus is in our lives and who we are in relationship with the living God through Christ and others who truly are apart from our imposition and our category of biases. Left to our own devices, we will mess things up. And sometimes not in a good way. Allowing ourselves to marinate in the muck of life. To live in the gray areas. To tolerate ambiguity. To be okay with some confusion and mystery. Differences of opinion and supernatural truth. That allows us to gain new clarity and a clear understanding of what it means to be alive. To be vital, to feel, to be creative, to be renewed, and be relational. That's what it is when we have a relationship with God. We're relational. But in order to see our world, Jesus said you're in the world, not of the world. And so while you're here, you've got to deal with this worldly stuff. It's not fun dealing with the worldly stuff. Sometimes I think in order to see our world clearly, we need to muddy or blur our vision. Certainty is a vision that creates division. The more we think, our own eyes can predict our truth, the more divisions we will create. Only when we blur our boundaries can we truly see the truth of our humanness and our unified common origin. We all came from the dirt of the earth. The bulk of this story today in the scripture in John 9, the Pharisees literally are asking the same question over and over and over again. My grand says, Pappy, he said, how come when you preach, you just preach over, 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 you do the same thing over? Well, that's what's going on with the Pharisees. They're asking the same question over and over again. Demanding an answer that makes sense to their system of control and belief. They simply can't see beyond their two feet. The results? Anyone who believes that Jesus is the Messiah will be banned from church or the synagogue back in the day when Jesus was here on this earth. That's what the Pharisees and the Sadducees said. If you believe in this guy and being the Messiah, you can't come to church anymore. The Pharisees will sanction you. They'll declare you unclean. They will not even allow you to be a part of the community. This is the ultimate exclusive thing. Shunning is about control and order. Believe as we do, or you're going to get kicked out. Sound familiar? Some 2,000 years later? You don't believe like I do? You're no good. We're going to cancel you. This kind of intolerance and division creates collateral damage, and it creates a fragile culture. We're living in a fragile culture. Any moment a riot can come across the borders of our country. But think about it. Here you got a piece of pottery. Pottery is made from combining mud and clay and water, and then forming it into a jar or a bowl. And as long as that pottery is messy and moist, it can be formed and changed. But when it hardens, it becomes fragile. It cracks, breaks. But here's the beauty of clay pottery. It can always be renewed. As long as it's not put into a kiln or a clean, whatever, an oven that hardens it. The potter can add water to this clay. He can heal it. He can reform it, remold it, and anew make a beautiful, fresh piece of art. Something totally different than what it was originally, as long as it's not oven fired. This is essential. What Jesus, the divine potter, is doing when he heals that blind man in the story in John 9. Born blind, the man had been unable to see physically. He had been sidelined from his community and blamed for his handicap. You must be a sinner. That's why you were born blind. Or your parents were sinners. And you were punished being born blind because your parents sinned. He's been sidelined from the community and blamed for this handicap. And then Jesus turns this upside down and declares that in fact this man has been born blind so that he can better see. And so that he can declare the glory of God. He then takes dirt and spittle. And he makes it into a clay paste. And creates eyes in the same way that God created the first human being, Adam, out of dirt and water. Jesus is the Messiah. He is the creator of this story. Just as God is the creator, because he is God manifested into the flesh. So he restores eyes to the man. And with them, the blind man gained spiritual vision as well as physical vision. He can see. And he begins to believe. And he recognizes this truly is the Son of God. Jesus, my Messiah and Lord. He sees for the first time the truth of God's grace and love, the truth about what is pure and what is sinful. And the truth about God's desire for restoration to all. You know how many all are? All of God's people. He restored his relationship. He restored to his community. He became an active part in the community. He was restored, more importantly, to God. You see, seeing Jesus, it's not about making things clear in our point of view, but about making things muddy enough so that we can see the truth of God's mystery. Life's a mystery. It's a beautiful thing that God had created and allowed us to live in it, but it's a mystery. The revelation, the glorious, the miraculous healing power and majesty of the things that we see and can't see, and the part of healing our hearts. Sometimes a hardened heart promotes fragility, intolerance, division, blindness to God and to others. Muddiness and messiness allows us to see beyond ourselves, to let go of our controls, and thereby to heal. That little phrase, let go and let God, is important, but it's hard. That's that thing we call faith. Oh yeah, I'm going to give you my this and that and whatever. And I want you to handle it, God. let go of our controls, and thereby we are be able to experience healing in our world, and experience what it feels like to be in sync with creation, to get in touch with the wild and the free and the creative and relational spirit that lives within us. In the Holy Land today, and I say the Holy Land, that whole area, what we call the Fertile Crescent, but more importantly, what we talk about as the Holy Land is the part of Israel that goes all the way down where the Jordan River empties into the Dead Sea. You don't think about the Dead Sea having healing capabilities. The Dead Sea produces a mud, I got pictures of me in the mud with all that mud all over me, and even this little fat body floating around on top of the Dead Sea because of its salty content. But mud, that mud has a therapeutic and medicinal property. It's a natural healer. Mud draws out toxins and increases blood flows, and it infuses us with valuable minerals that heal the skin. Even helps with arthritis. You can buy Dead Sea mud in any of the health stores anymore. We brought some back, but it's all gone now. Look how beautiful I am. That's what I get these mud packs. But almost in every country today, we're beginning to see the value of mud. Instead of mud rooms attached to our homes, we visit spas with room for mud treatment. Ladies know about that. I don't know if anybody here had them or not, but they're helpful. And we understand the healing power of our natural world. Almost all the medicines that we have. Now, some of them are chemically put together, some, but most of the medicine comes from nature, trees and plants, and it's just amazing. But our world has a need for more than physical mud baths. We need a little more mud in our lives and in our world to blur out our divisions and heal our hearts. Our churches, our modern day churches, need to lead the way. Our churches need to become mud rooms in which people can once again come together without judgment, without division, without unrealistic expectations, in order to see Jesus. For many people, both in Jesus' time and today, 2,000 some odd years later, Jesus manages and his messages are about as clear as mud. That's why we study together. That's why we come together, to encourage each other in the faith. Oh, it's messy, it's muddy, but it gives us space. It gives us room and to seek permission to look beyond ourselves into our own limitations. God of our world and others all around us. The more we allow ourselves to marinate in the muddiness and the messiness of faith, relationships, questions, uncertainty, the more authentically beautiful and creative the whole and vital part of our lives will become. It starts with us individually. So today, I ask and encourage you as you leave this place of God, these four walls, let go of certainty, judgment, control, and embrace faith, humanness, and the unexpected part of your life. I think you will be pleasantly surprised at the amazing things and people that see you and you see them, maybe you have never noticed before.